Hello everyone, welcome back to the Crash MotoGP podcast. And yes, after a little break, we are back for season 4 of the podcast and some new faces. The voice you hear or the face you see on screen, I'm Jordan. I am the social media manager for Crash MotoGP. And we're joined by, of course, Pete McLaren, our MotoGP editor, and Rob Jones, our World Superbike journalist. Guys, how are we?
Very good, thank you, Jordan. Yeah, it's been a long winter. We've had a lot of time staring at lap times over the Alps, haven't we? But nearly ready to go racing and get the biggest season in Grand Prix history, as it should be. Let's see what happens with Kazakhstan, if we do get 21 rounds or 20, underway. And Qatar, always a unique event with the night race, always produces a few surprises, and I'm sure we'll have some upsets this weekend.
Let's hope so. Rob, what do you think? What have you thought of testing so far? Any surprises?
Yeah. Well, firstly, it's good to join you both. And like you said, Pete, it's been a long winter, but I think testing has been short but interesting. You know, it's always a case of you don't want to read too much into it, but there's still a lot to be taken away from it, because obviously the new bikes, there's always rider changes that have taken place, and you want to see how those riders are adapting going into the new season. And obviously we've had some big changes for this season, but I think the playing field is probably as we sort of expected, as much as we can based off testing going into the opening round, and it's a case of, I think, for a lot of them trying to close the gap to Ducati. So I think Qatar, once we get into the racing, and obviously second season with the sprints, everyone will be sort of up to date with the format, knowing exactly how they need to prepare for those races then going into the Grand Prix. So I think we'll get probably even tighter racing based off that this season.
Yeah, no, I agree. And as you said, there's that period of adaptation for many. Of course, the biggest one for that, the best place to start would be Marc Marquez on the Ducati. Now, I think, as a whole, the preseason for him has been pretty good. You know, we've had a few days where that first day in Malaysia and testing, where he had that day where the bike just seemed to have little teething issues here and there. But for the most part, especially in Qatar, it seemed that he was pretty comfortable. He was still working on his riding style to fit the Ducati. And he only had one crash as well. So, Pete, where do you think Mark's preseason stacks up against the others? Do you think it was pretty much what he expected, or do you think it was beyond his expectation?
I think it's probably what he expected, realistically. Obviously, you always hope to be top of the timesheets, don't you? But realistically, switching to the bike, and his crew chief, Frankie Carcetti, said this, there's not many riders that have jumped straight on the Ducati, as good as the bike is, and been immediately front of the field. There is this adaptation process that you need to learn how to get the most from the bike. And I think, Mark, where did he end up? Sort of top six, and I think he sees himself as that position as being realistic for him, as sort of a few tenths away from the others, or the very top of the grid. But I think you'd be pretty pleased with that as a starting point. That's not a bad place to be.
Yeah, and Rob, the same, probably you would say the same as Pete. You know, the thing that I've noticed from him in testing, especially on longer runs, he seems pretty comfortable. And from a few clips that I've heard and seen on social media, you know, MotoGP put out, he seems to be thinking that the Ducati's actually, you know, it doesn't seem like rocket science, but it's easier to ride compared to the Honda. But his adaptation that way for race pace seems to be quite strong.
Yeah, I think race pace has, without question, been his strongest area since joining Ducati. And I mean, it's important, I think, to remember that although he's had, in his words as well, some struggles getting up to speed with the time attack performance, to still be top five or top six, knowing how good he is in the races and how he can always find that extra bit of pace in the race, a bit like Brad Binder from KTM. You know, come Sunday, always able to, wherever he's qualified, improve that position and go forward a bit in the race. So if Mark could continue to make strides in that sense with his race pace, especially in the sprint simulations, was very, very strong.
Yeah.
So if he can just...
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Qualify well, I think he'll put himself in position to, from round one, be a challenger going forward.
Yeah, and like you said, you know, he said to the media that he has been struggling for the time attacks, but when you look at it, in Malaysia, he was inside the top six. He was, you know, he done his fastest ever lap of Malaysia. And then in Qatar, he was fourth fastest on the final day. So it shows that if he's struggling as such, like he says, with time attack, I mean, he's pretty much, he's still fast. And I think if he can just extract whatever he wants out of that bike, whether I seem to think the main issue is his riding position, it seems to be, he looks a bit different when you've seen him in the videos that I've watched. It just looks a little unnatural. As it will do, because he's only done 322 laps over the complete testing from Valencia to Qatar before he rides that bike, and the less he crashes, you know, when he had one crash in testing, I think, you know, his confidence is just going to keep growing and growing as we get further into the season. And then when you look at, you know, his expectation for this weekend, do you think, you know, if he finished, say, the sprint and the Grand Prix inside the top five and maybe got a podium, would that be a success?
I think so, and I think it's certainly realistic. A lot depends on qualifying. You're talking about the time attacks quite rightly, and you know, he said, and Luca Marini said also, the way the Ducati uses the rear tire, yeah, which is really its strong point, isn't it? But it's the complete opposite of the Honda, and so that's what he's trying to get used to, isn't it? And I think that in the time attack situation, that's really where you need to maximise the rear tyre, isn't it? Not only on the way out the corners. Marini was explaining, actually, he thinks the Ducati gains a lot on the way into the corners, yeah, when they have a new rear tyre with the grip. So that's what Mark's got to get his head around. But as you say, he's up there in the top six already in the testing on the time attack. So if he can do that and start on the first couple of rows, that'll be a big step. Qatar, of course, the qualifying is in the daytime, the racing is in the nighttime. So you always tend to get people that are much stronger in the night situation might struggle a bit, vice versa. Some others might be up there in the day conditions when it's obviously a lot hotter. So that always mixes the qualifying up, and that will be a big part of it, of course.
Yeah, Rob, what do you think? Do you think this weekend he has a chance of maybe even fighting for the victory at all? Do you think that's possible?
I think if he's going to fight for, I think it's probably still a bit too early. If he's going to fight for the win, I think the sprint is probably going to be his best chance. If he can, like Pete said, if he can qualify well and then just treat the sprint as, you know, a flat out race where it's 12, 11 laps of just solid pace, I think he could challenge. I think where his unfamiliarity with the bike could cost him in the Grand Prix is just over a full race distance, with people like Martin and Bagnaia having that experience of knowing how the Ducati is going to behave later on in the race. It's probably where Mark would just take a few rounds to adapt. But I think something that's going to help him in the races, but particularly qualifying going forward, is whenever he's been at Honda in the past, he's always been the top rider. He's never had someone quicker than him and not really had anyone to look at in terms of data. Now he's going to Ducati, where he's got Bagnaia's data, he's got Martin's data, and he's gone in as someone who's not expected to be the quickest rider or isn't going to be the quickest rider initially. I think that's a new position for Marquez, and that could be something that really helps him as he gets familiar with the bike. You know, 2-3 rounds into the season, I think we could even see like a big change that early on.
Yeah, and like you say, the first few rounds of the year, I would say, are quite favourable for him. You know, we go to tracks, we go to Portimao. He was quite quick on the Honda there last year. I know he was taking a lot of risks, you know, that he got that incredible pole position, you know, but he did get a toe from it, and he was very strong in the sprint race. And obviously what happened in the Grand Prix with the incident with Oliveira. But then we miss Argentina because it is cancelled, and then we go straight to Texas. So I think, knowing his mindset and what he's like, he loves COTA, and it is a circuit that just, yeah, it's made it perfectly for him with the Honda, and the Ducati has been stronger in there in the recent years. You know, Bastianini won there, of course Bagnaia was leading the race last year in Texas before crashing out, so I would expect Marquez to be right on the pace and challenging for victories, maybe as early as Portimao, but I could definitely expect it in Texas. Anyway, speaking about Ducati, I can't seem to think of a pre-season for a factory team that's went as perfectly as for the factory Ducati team. Pete, what do you think of Pecco Bagnaia and Andrea Bastianini's preseason? That GP24 seems to be just an upgrade on pretty much everything that was good on the 23 and the 22.
Yeah, that might be the bad news for Mark, isn't it? From what you guys are saying, is that he's on the Ducati, but it looks like there might be a bigger gap between the year-old bike, which obviously he's on, and the factory bikes this year. Last year we saw them all sort of mixed up, didn't we, where sometimes it'd be the year old bike ahead, sometimes the factory bikes, but from what we've seen in testing, there is sort of a bit of a clearer divide between them. And as you say, quite unusual for a new bike to actually be just better in all areas and not have any teething problems, but that's really the way that it seems to be. And Pecco, I mean, I think he said it's pretty much working perfectly now, which is not obviously what his rivals want to hear. But that's all part of the game, isn't it? And there didn't seem to be any problems really for them. You're looking at minor things, like there was a bit of chatter that some riders had on the last day of testing in Qatar that maybe they'll have to dial out for the race weekend. There were initial concerns about the throttle connection on the new Ducati, but Pecco said it was a lot better by the end of the Qatar test. Now, of course, Sepang and Qatar, they have high grip, newly surfaced tracks. So maybe later in the season, coming onto the European tracks, the older surfaces, less grip, maybe that could come up again. But really, there's virtually anything to find as a weakness at this stage. Everything that they put on the bike, engine, chassis, aero, seems to be an improvement. And the riders all seem to agree it's an improvement. It's not just one rider thinks it's great and the others don't.
And that's the thing that I've noticed. You know, obviously, unfortunately, with Frankie Morbidelli, he wasn't able to test the 24 because of that crash he had in Portimao. But when you look at the results, you know, the three GP24s, you know, Bagnaia, Bastianini and Martin, they're just solid. I think, you know, it depends on the program they were running, but whenever they wanted to do a fast lap, they could do it, no problem. And when they were doing race pace, they looked so consistent. I noticed with Martin, for example, he was kind of between two Ferrans, especially in Sepang. I don't think he was kind of as sure as the factory team. He kind of took a little bit longer to adapt. I think once he went to Qatar, and I think he noticed, okay, this is the engine's perfect for me now, and so is the aero. I think Martin will be right on the pace with the two red bikes especially. And Rob, what do you think of Andrea Bastianini's pre-season? Because I think he's kind of, not surprised people, but I think, you know, he's kind of went back to the 2022. Andrea Bastianini, you know, obviously last year it was really unlucky with injury. And yes, he did win a race, but he never really looked like he was able to match Bagnaia on, you know, most weekends. Do you think he'll take a lot of confidence from pre-season?
I do. I think the way he ended last season, and with his win at Sepang, obviously it's a good circuit for him. So to see him go so strongly there in testing wasn't a surprise. And obviously, you know, he's a five-time race winner in MotoGP. So we can't really call his resurgence to being at the front a surprise. But at the same time, I think given how strongly Bagnaia started the preseason, it's easy to forget that Bastianini has been there or thereabout, right behind him on every day pretty much. And obviously the second day in Sepang, he was fastest. So I think Bastianini is, if he can avoid injury and just continue this vein of form going into the season, I think we look at Martin as going to be the biggest challenger, and rightly so. But I think there could be a lot of, or a big challenge coming Bagnaia's way in the factory team. And I think Bastianini himself is going to want to prove a lot this year just because of what it could mean going into 2025. Because his seat is obviously, like most of the factory riders, up for grabs after this season. Yep. And I think for Bastianini, the important thing is, from his mindset, is he's going to want to perform for that team based on essentially last season being a lost year for him.
Yeah.
So I think he's got a lot riding on this year, but I think he's come back fully fit. He's in a good place, and I think he's going to be a challenger from the first race onwards.
No, I agree. Like you said, contract situation, you know, I can't believe there's not even been really anything that's happened, but everyone's talking about 2025 already. And like you say, that seat that Bastianini has, you know, Martin essentially wants it. I can only imagine that Marc Marquez would probably want it if it came calling. And then you have everything else with Ducati. You know, there's reports of Fermín Aldeguer, who's already apparently signed for Pramac going into 2025. So Bastianini, if there was someone that maybe would get moved out of Ducati completely, I think he's that rider. But I think, like you say, he wants to prove that he deserves this spot. And like you mentioned, his 2022 season, he was fantastic. And he was in that place where Mark is, where he was on the year older bike and he was able just to do his own weekend, not have to test anything, just then go out and just essentially, you know, be a nuisance to every other Ducati rider. Good point for him is that the 2024 bike mimics pretty much some of the good parts of the 22, which he never really got to ride, but he said that last year's bike, in terms of engine characteristic, in terms of when he was getting on the brakes, it really didn't help. And as Pete said, it worked straight out of the box, so he was able to get comfortable already with that. So all the Ducati riders on that 24, I expect them to be right at the front straight away. If there's some issue, I don't know what it could be, but yeah, it would be a big issue if they weren't at the front. And then we've got to look at the 23s as well. You know, we've got Bezzecchi and Digian Antonio on VR46. I think Digian Antonio went under the radar because his times were really impressive in race run. And going to Qatar this weekend, of course, where he won his first Grand Prix, I think he could be a real dark horse this weekend. What do you think about that, Pete?
Well, Gresini are chasing three in a row, aren't they, Jordan? Yeah, you're quite right there with Bastianini and Didier last year. So
yeah, true.
Yeah. I for me, Didier is the dark horse of the year, if you like. If you can say that about someone that won only a few months ago, but yeah, I think he's definitely, like you say, he's one of the guys who hasn't been at the top of the timesheets, if you like, over the single lap, but his race pace particularly is really impressive. And it almost the opposite of Bastianini, isn't he, in that he got on the 23 and just instantly liked it. He hasn't had to change his style, it seems, at all. He's one of the guys that has liked it. His teammate Bezzecchi has taken longer to get into it, hasn't he? He sort of really quite a tough test in Sepang and didn't seem too comfortable on it, but then made late progress in Qatar. So both of those guys could be up there this weekend, and that's where the test helps them, isn't it? They've got 2 days they've had on track, and now they're going into a race weekend as satellite riders without new parts to throw on the bike. They can just do setup, and they should be somewhere near going into the race weekend.
Bezzecchi, it surprised me that he wasn't the one in the VR46 team that would, you know, make that jump again on the 23, because he was so strong last year on the 22. But like you mentioned with Didier, I think, you know, no rider has improved like rapidly from the second half of last year to where he is now. You know, the confidence and everything has seemed to click. And yeah, like you mentioned, he's a real dark horse heading into this weekend. I wouldn't be surprised if he was on the podium or even challenged or took the victory. So yeah, Ducati are looking very strong. Let's go to the opposite side of the grid. Now, Honda and Yamaha, their progression throughout the winter into testing. Obviously, we have the new concessions in place. And it would be fair to say that Honda have not radically changed, but, you know, it looks very different, even in terms of their livery as well. It just looks like a whole new era after Marc Marquez. What do you think about Honda, Pete? Do you think that there was a surprise of how well the factory riders and, of course, Zarco and Nakagami said about the new bike? Do you think they were pleased, or what was the general vibe that you got from them?
Well, as you say, John, it looks radically different to start with, doesn't it? When you just look at the bike, it now does look like the European bikes more, doesn't it? Long, low, lots of aero. It is a real visual change, let's say. But the strange thing is that it seems that this rear grip weakness that they had has been carried over. So despite all of those differences that to look at, the weakness of the bike is still there. But I think the difference is there's a lot more optimism now. There's a clearer direction for them. I think they are making steps in the right direction. All four riders seem to agree. They've got the two guys, as you say, coming over from Ducati. So you've got Zarco and Marini with all that knowledge that they bring with them. And they're able to say, look, you know, the Ducati works like this, or this is the area where the bike is most different to the Ducati. We were speaking earlier about the rear tire, and I think it is the rear tire, the rear grip, and also at Yamaha, it seems a similar thing. That's the area where they're lacking now. But as you say, they've got the concessions. I think that they're going to be closer. Surely they have to be, with all these opportunities they have to test now. It's a question of time, isn't it?
Yeah. You
know, how long will it take them to get up there? We heard at the Honda launch, Puig sort of, he doesn't like to make big sort of objectives or targets, does he? But it sounds like second half of the season, they want to be fighting for the podium. And Marini seemed similar. That's sort of what he's aiming at as well. And I think that's pretty realistic.
Yeah, and I think that Marini, out of the Repsol Honda team, I think he would struggle more than Joan Mir, but I think that Joan Mir actually was quite impressive in testing in terms of the jump that he was able to make in terms of last year, because it was such a bad year. And I think also having Santi Hernandez, you know, most of Marquez's old crew as well, I think that's going to bring out the best in Mir. I was quite impressed, to be honest, from his Sepang, like, numbers and lap times. Like, I know that in Qatar, there was a bit of an illness or a bug going around the Repsol Honda team, so they weren't all fighting fully fit. But like you say, it is baby steps, but if Puig says that they're going to be fighting for podiums in the second half of the year, that's a big jump. I still think to get through, you know, KTM and Aprilia, who we're yet to talk about, you know, the gap is still quite big. But I think that Honda have made that jump compared to Yamaha. And Rob, speaking about Yamaha, it seems to be the same old. They're able to do race runs, no problem. But when it comes to time attacks, the rear grip is just not there for them, and they're not able to do that fast lap. What do you think from testing?
I think, obviously, with them only having the two bikes on the grid, that's not helping. And yeah. I think with Alex Rins coming over, that is going to be, I think it makes them a stronger lineup. You know, with all respect to Morbidelli, I think Alex Rins is a very, very good rider, and he's going to, their comments, the two riders, Quartararo and Rins, seem to be very similar. So at least, I think, talking about Honda and them having a direction, I think that will help Yamaha have a clear direction. But like you said, they have, if not stayed fourth in the pecking order, maybe even fallen behind Honda. And it's disappointing to see, because they've got two extremely talented riders who are struggling to get anything out of their time attack pace. And like you said, the race runs are good, but it's exactly the same issue as last year, is when they're in clear air, the bike's working well and the bike's strengths are being shown.
Yeah.
But then as soon as they're behind and trying to follow, they just can't find the lap time, and they're struggling with grip. I mean, their top speed has improved again, I think, which is good. But if it's only a matter of a few kilometers per hour, it's not going to make a difference when you've got the likes of Ducati, who aren't producing a bad bike. They're always improving their bike every year, and it feels like Yamaha aren't making those steps.
Yeah. I think it's when you look at the photos of, say, every bike on the grid, if you compared the Yamaha to, say, 2016, 2017, to what it looked like, you know, it kind of still looks the same, that bike. It doesn't look like the European bikes, essentially. Like Pete said, the Honda has made that jump in terms of the visual look on it. It looks different. But yeah, I seem to think that Quartararo, you know, yeah, he knows they have concessions, but he wants results quickly. And like we said, it's a contract year for everybody, pretty much. Pete, do you think this could be maybe the beginning of the end for him and Yamaha's relationship if things don't go, you know, accordingly in the first few rounds?
So Lynn Jarvis was speaking about this at the test. Obviously, we were sort of quizzing him on this and have they done enough to keep Quartararo? And so there's two main parts to it, as he put it. And this also applies to Yamaha getting a satellite team. And that's obviously, you need the results. That's the most important thing. So the first few rounds is going to be vital to see, have they made a step? What's it like in a race situation? And then the second thing is, you need to convince them, the partners or the riders, the satellite team, the riders, that the changes you're making are going to pay off. And he was using the example of Lewis Hamilton jumping from McLaren to Mercedes, and then Mercedes to Ferrari now, where you look at a team for not what the bike they have now, or the car in the case of Formula One, but what they're going to have in the future. And so that's what Yamaha, that's also a part of it, is the changes that they're making behind the scenes, the bringing in the ex-Ducati guys, you know, working with Dallara on the aero. All of that is also aimed at saying, look, we are on the way, we do have a plan here, and we are going to catch up. And so, you know, that's important as well, but they need results, and there's no way around that. It's a results-based business, and yet the question is, how long, as you say, how long does Quartararo give it? Do you wait a long time? But then, of course, the other rides will disappear, won't they?
Yeah.
So it's a tough one to balance. How long before he makes that call? certainly the satellite team for Yamaha, they want to know before the summer break because they need time to get all the resources and things. So that's sort of a bit of a line in the sand on that decision.
Yeah.
But yeah, in terms of the rider contracts, I think, that big part of the year for Yamaha as far as keeping Quartararo.
Not you, man.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Mentioned about the satellite team for Yamaha, it actually appears that VR46 aren't going to be that satellite team, because from what I've seen, it looks like the VR46 want to renew with Ducati, which obviously makes logical sense. It is the best bike on the grid. People were expecting a bigger jump from testing what they were going to bring. And, you know, it, like you said, Rob, the numbers are just not great for them. They've only got two bikes on the grid compared to the Ducati's eight. Even with, like, you know, the KTMs and the Aprilias, they have four. It's double the amount. And the same for Honda. Yeah, I just think that they just don't have enough structure, you know, people, other teams to give them feedback on everything. There's only two riders and, yeah, it's at a disadvantage. But
it just seems like they've been lost, I think, for a couple of years. And Quartararo has tried to be as upbeat as he can. And even in pre-season, there was some good comments coming from him that the rideability of the bike, which has always been a good part for Yamaha, was strong again. But it seems that from last year, well, from 22 to 23, and then this year, or 23 to this year, the only improvements they're making are already to the strong parts of the bike. They're not attacking the weaknesses and really getting closer based off of that. I don't know if there's a direction or somewhere higher up where the communication is falling apart a bit, because there just doesn't seem to be those leaps forward that you see from Honda, even, who have clearly identified the weaknesses. And although they're still going to take them some time to come up to where they need to be, they seem to have a clear direction of where they're going.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, like we say, just keep an eye on that situation, how it develops in the first few rounds of the year, because a lot of the contracts are it kind of starts really from the European season, doesn't it? And there's second half of the year, we start hearing things. So keep an eye on Yamaha and Quartararo. Speaking about KTM and Aprilia, now they brought a lot of new aerodynamic stuff in testing. I think they were the two that really pushed out everything. Pete, you were there in Sepang. I believe you did see the aero rake that was on the Aprilia, which is very F1 style. What did you think of Aprilia's pre-season, and especially with their aerodynamic developments?
Yeah, Aprilia were a bit unlucky at Sepang in that their garage was right below the media centre. So, of course, every time they left the pits, everyone looked out the window and there seemed to be something new on the bike. I mean, as you say, to look at, radical, isn't it? The aerodynamics or the rear part of the bike, the little mini F1 diffuser and everything. They've pushed heavily in that direction. I think they said they had something like 15 or 20 different aero combinations to test.
It's incredible.
And probably a similar number at KTM, to be honest. Leish seemed to get on the bike and just liked it straight away. He says it's not easy to ride with all that aero, but he doesn't care because it's fast. He just loved the mid-corner speed, everything about that. And for him, the bike's better in every area except the engine. That seems to be where they haven't really made too many big changes on the Aprilia, and that's a bit of a concern for them. At KTM, they haven't changed the chassis, it seems, from the version of the carbon fiber they used last year, at the end of last year. And again, maybe that's because they've got so many aero parts, both KTM and Aprilia, by not changing one area of the bike, it just gives them one less thing to worry about, doesn't it? It's one less combination to put together. So Aprilia have sort of chosen not to make big changes on the engine, KTM not on the chassis. I suppose they would say that the chassis they raced last year was the 24, really. They just introduced it early, didn't they? Both of them look to be closer. I think we were talking about the gap between the 24 Ducati and the 23. I mean, maybe the Aprilia and the KTM, certainly the top guys, you could put them in between, couldn't you?
Definitely.
Maybe?
100%.
So I think they've closed the gap. Yeah,
yeah, I seem to think that too. But it's almost the how could you put it? They were maybe a bit deflated because the Ducati was so good out the box straight away. Because I do think that the KTM and Aprilia have improved, but it's just not as much as the Ducati. And like you said, the top guys, you know, especially Brad Binder, like we said, he's a Sunday rider. He loves when it comes to race time. And I think it's crazy to think he's never had a pole position in MotoGP. If he could get on pole position and start on the front two rows, I think in Qatar, he'll be a real player this weekend. I think that the KTM on its tires is always, I think it's maybe the best bike. I would go out to say that because it always seems to be consistent compared to like the Aprilia, where it maybe drop off you see sometimes with Maverick. And then going to the other side of Aprilia, you know, they have the Trackhouse Racing team now, and Miguel Oliveira is riding the 24. He seemed to have a bit of a difficult time, Rob, in testing. It didn't seem to go as easier for him, let's say, compared to Ralph Hernandez, who was struggling with injury but is riding the older bike.
Yeah, I think Oliveira is probably the most surprising but a disappointing surprise. I think obviously when Trackhouse Racing took over that team, there was a lot of anticipation, and then with Oliveira being given the 24 bike, for him it's a good scenario of going up against the likes of Aleix and Maverick Viñales and knowing exactly where he stacks up and being on competitive machinery, because we know that Aprilia, like you both said, has taken, I think, big steps forward, especially in Qatar, to see on both days Ralph Hernandez on the year-old bike and then the two factory riders up there throughout both days. The bike clearly has potential. And I think for Aprilia, it's just making sure they have that potential over the whole season at tracks that, because it seems the last 2 years when they've gone to the flyaway part of the championship, the performance
it's really hurt them. Yeah, no, I think with Oliveira, he actually said the last day was quite good in the end, but he didn't have enough time because it took him so long to figure out, you know, other cases direction I want to go in. But like you say, I think that's the thing with the Aprilia, it's not as consistent as it should be. You know, when you see them on the pace, like I think back to Catalunya last year, they looked unbeatable. So they did, and it seems to be when that bike is in that window, no one can get near it. But you know, the window needs to be at more circuits throughout the year. And Maverick Viñales, Pete, I don't know where Maverick was with the aerodynamics. He didn't seem to be too happy. I seem to think he wanted to use the 23, I believe, he said to the media. I think he said that in Sepang. But how do you think that he's going to go this year? Because it'll be his third season fully on the Aprilia and still no victory. And I think Aprilia were banging on him being the rider that would take them to that next level.
Yeah, similarly, I think his situation to Oliveira in terms of not feeling comfortable on the new bike. I think, as we were saying, Aleix really seemed to love the new aero. But with Viñales and Oliveira, who of course jumped 2 years, having gone from the year-old bike to the factory bike, it just changed the balance completely. And so Viñales, at the end of last year, wasn't it? He was saying, I've got a balance now that works on the Aprilia at the hot tracks and the places that you were saying they struggled, and was really confident. And that seems to have gone now with the new bike. He's had to start again. And as you say, we saw them trying some of the older parts on the back of the bike, but maybe the aero balance, you know, putting all that aero at the back, it's not working for them. It doesn't give them the feeling they want. They also spoke a lot about engine braking. That seemed to be an issue, both Oliveira and Vinales, going into the corners where they didn't feel comfortable or consistent on the bike. So, they've certainly, I suppose a bit like Bezzecchi, they've certainly taken a lot longer to get used to their new bike, if you like, than some of their teammates. And you know, Aleix, as I say, really... just he said he never imagined that they'd have a pre-season that would go this well. I mean, it was better than he had hoped for, but certainly not the same for the other guys. You say Raul was very fast, but I mean, you know, after a disaster within the opening hour at Sepang, I mean, that was a big high side that he had. I think a couple of fractures, isn't it?
It was quite.
I didn't think he was fractured at the time. He went back out. He went to the medical. I saw him going into the medical center, limping away. You know, he was walking and then went back to the garage and did a few more laps. But yeah, he's not the way to start the year, but he's turned it around, hasn't he, fortunately, in the Qatar 10.
I think that, like you say, with Raul Fernandez, I think he kind of downplayed the injuries too. I mean, he has a couple of cracks, like hairline fractures of his pelvis, which, you know, to be going the speed he was in Qatar, I think it was really impressive. And he's definitely one to watch. But as you said, the adaptation period for some riders has been difficult. But there's one rider on a KTM, well, a GasGas, who is a rookie. And I think a lot of people are expecting big things. And that would be Pedro Acosta. Rob, what have you made of his testing so far? I think he's been really impressive to watch.
Yeah, I think he's been brilliant. I think everything that we expected and hoped for, he's been. I think Acosta is probably, since Marc Marquez, has been the most highly anticipated rookie that we've had in the championship, and it helps that he's stepping onto a very good bike, bike that should be very competitive from the first round of the season. But you know, I think we forget that, yeah, he's got all the accolades in Moto3, you know, as a rookie world champion and then winning in his second year as Moto2, but he's still 19 years old. And to step on that bike and to be doing the things he's doing, and even in Valencia, it took a matter of a couple of hours before the sort of scares and of being on that bike and the power delivery sort of shocking him. After a couple of hours, that was gone. And it was a case of, right now I feel comfortable. It's just finding the limit, pushing the bike, understanding what other riders are doing. But in Sepang, he was brilliant. Obviously, having the shakedown, I think, was a
big help,
perfect for him, just getting that extra few days. But again, in Qatar, and I think similar how we've talked about contracts with Jack Miller, potentially having Acosta looking over his shoulder all season long for a potential KTM ride next year, Acosta sort of has a free year to just learn. And if he just builds and builds and builds and continues to get the results that we expect he's going to get, I think he's going to put himself potentially in the running for a factory seat. But I mean, his preseason has been amazing. There's no way other to describe it, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think as far as a rookie preseason would go, it's been pretty much the best he could expect for him. Pete, I've seen a stat that I think he has maybe 9 or 10 Grand Prix to beat Marc Marquez's record as the youngest ever Grand Prix winner. Do you think that's possible? Do you think he could break that record?
I mean, anything's possible, isn't it? But, I mean, where was he on the timesheets in Qatar the last day?
He wasn't. He was, like, he was 16th. I think he's more focused on race pace.
Yeah, sure. But that's the other part of it, is no matter how fast you are in a race pace, you've got to qualify well. And that is sometimes the trickiest part, isn't it? He might have the pace to fight for the win, or, like a lot of guys. But if you're not starting near the front, it's tricky in MotoGP because there's no bad riders, is there? So, I mean, he's certainly got the talent to do it. It's a question of if not when, isn't it, really? I think that's how everyone's looking at Acosta and when he's at the top of the grid. But yeah, as Rob was saying, Sepang for me was really impressive. When he came out, even in the shakedown, okay, there's only a handful of riders, but those riders included Dani Pedrosa and Paul Espargaro on the same bike. And he was pretty much as fast as them right from the first day of the shakedown. And I think also from the fitness side, to do that many laps was impressive. You know, for a rookie, he's not the biggest guy.
No.
And to do that many laps, I think that also gave him a lot of confidence that he's got the fitness. He did a full race simulation, didn't he, on the last day in Qatar, despite a few hiccups along the way, which again means he goes into the season knowing, yeah, I can, you know, I can go the distance on one of these bikes. Of course, the intensity of a full race, that's different, isn't it?
Yes,
bikes overtaking you, things like that. But still, I mean, he couldn't have asked for much more from testing, I think.
Like you said about the fitness, I think he said, maybe it was during the launch, how much kilos he's actually put on during pre-season. And to see, you know, you look at photos of him compared to the Valencia test, to like the Sepang test, you can see physically that he's grown, and he's, you know, he's really embraced the challenge of, you know, I want to get on top of this thing straight away. Because a lot of Moto2 riders, that seems to be the struggle for them, you know, the weight and just how much physical effort a MotoGP bike is. So yeah, I've been really impressed with Acosta, and it does help him that he's tested at the first track that they're going to race at. You know, Frankie Carchetti said it on the, I think it was the Off Track podcast I listened to, when Joan Mir was in his rookie season at Suzuki. You know, they'd done 3 days of testing at Qatar, and then in the first weekend, he was able to run in the front pack. He was inside the top seven for most of that race. So I think the measure for Acosta will be going to a track that he doesn't know, essentially, for a MotoGP bike, and let's see how he gets on in Portimao, Texas. We'll see then how he stacks up, because the first weekend could be not a false sense of how quick he is, because he's so fast. But yeah, let's see how he progresses at circuits where he just has the same amount of time as everyone else, really. So, but yeah, Acosta, I think he's been a breath of fresh air for the MotoGP class, and I'm excited to see how that progresses. Just staying with KTM briefly, Brad Binder and Jack Miller, they have seemed to be pretty happy with their pre-season. I think Binder is really impressed with how the grip is with the tires. I think that, you know, his race pace is always great, but Jack Miller, that's where he struggled last year. And Rob, do you think, like you mentioned, with Acosta looming over his shoulder, you know, wanting that factory seat for 25, do you think that Miller can do enough to stay in that seat?
I think he's got, I mean, we all know how good Jack Miller is, and I think he's got the chance to, what's important for him is I think he'll feel like he's got the chance to remain there if he does a good enough job. And that, for any rider, is probably all that they can ask for. He has been strong in pre-season, like Brad Binder, and I think they've got the bike to achieve race wins. They obviously didn't get a race win last year, apart from the two sprint races that Binder won. And obviously, it was the first year at KTM for Jack Miller, and I think so that second year, that progression period that you hope for, that first or second year that the rider takes, should come into fruition for Miller this season. I don't think he'll see Acosta has too much of a challenge in terms of he can't allow himself to think like that. He's just got to go about his business, put the results on the table, and then just give himself the best possibility to remain there. I think what will be interesting for Miller is if he's performing well, even if KTM want to make that switch, which probably is a big if, because they know that they've got Acosta now settled into their MotoGP program, and they could have him at GasGas for a second year.
Yeah.
But if they wanted to move him to the factory team, I think Miller will have plenty of options. I think Honda could even look at him for the Repsol team going forward, because he would be that big name to come in for 2025. But I think, given the bike that they've put on the table for Miller, I think this is a year where he can achieve a lot, but he'll be expecting to achieve and build on what he did last season.
Yeah, and what about you, Pete? Do you think it's a crunch time for Jack Miller, essentially?
Almost for KTM as a whole, isn't it? We know that they don't hide their ambitions. Pit Barra said, we're not going to be happy with just the top three in the championship. That would be the logical step, wouldn't it? Binder, obviously being fourth last year, would be the top three. But he went, we're not going to pretend we'll be happy with that. You know, they want to fight for the championship, and whoever that's with. And the pressure is on. I mean, there's no, they don't hide that. The pressure is on the whole team to fight for the championship this year. They feel they've got everything in place. They've got not only the bike, but also the people behind the scenes, the personnel, the riders, everything they feel is there in place. But as you say, they didn't win a Grand Prix last year. Should have won Valencia, obviously, but
it didn't
work out. But you know, they need to, you know, it's one thing to have all that potential. It's another thing to sort of deliver. And that's what they've got to do. And the pressure is on all of the riders, really, to do that.
Yeah. And like you say, they haven't won actually a Grand Prix since the 2021 Austrian Grand Prix. So that was the Binder on dry tires in the wet. That was the last time they actually won a Grand Prix, which is quite incredible when you think about it. But obviously, Binder's very strong in the sprint races. And then focus it on this weekend, just to do a bit of a preview. And like we said off camera, Pete, you know, we've got new Pirelli rubber in Moto2 and Moto3. How do you think that's going to change evolution for MotoGP? Because obviously, when they were tested in Qatar and Sepang, it was just Mitchell and Rubber, you know, would we see maybe a bit of a dip in lap time, or do you think it actually could help them?
I think the big problem is nobody knows, isn't it? We don't know exactly how it's going to change the grip. We're pretty sure it will change something, won't it? We saw, in, as you say, in the past with the Dunlop rubber and how it then reacted with the Michelin rubber that the MotoGP bikes had. How will the Pirelli? We don't know because they've been testing separately. As you say, you know, the Moto 2 and 3 guys have been in Jerez. MotoGP has been at Sepang, Qatar. So they haven't been on track together. Yeah. So this is a big question mark for this weekend. As well as, and we were talking about this earlier, weren't we, Jordan, that the car race that's recently been at Qatar, yeah. The World Endurance Race, and there's some big wheels on those cars, isn't there, putting down a lot of rubber. So what will that do to the grip? Honestly, nobody knows, but I think the chances are that it's going to change something, isn't it? And someone's going to benefit from it, and others will lose.
Yeah. Rob, I don't really want to bring this up, but obviously going into the new season, we have the tire pressure stuff. And, like, you always seem to forget, obviously, when a Grand Prix finishes, you're like, oh yeah, the tire pressure. Because, like, last year, obviously, we've seen Fabio Di Giannantonio lose a podium in Valencia. There's been a slight tweak to that rule, we believe. So do you think that the teams will have that in mind going into the sprint and the Grand Prix?
I think they will. I think what... It was a big topic of conversation last year. And I guess what you hope has happened is that, similar to with the sprints, is that the teams have... That added year of being able to understand the tire pressures, know what they need to do, and going into those races, know the settings they need to be at based on what could happen to the tires, whether it's like the grip at that particular track, the temperatures, whatever the sort of outside circumstance is for the teams. I guess it's a case of understanding the variables and making sure that they can move in that limit, because the worst thing, you know, we've seen it for years in Formula One with potential penalties after a race. All a fan wants at the end of a race is to know the result, is to have watched exactly. The race, know the result, and for the riders and teams themselves. And if there's that something hanging overhead and you don't quite know, and especially with a tire pressure, it's something that a team and a rider would be gutted to lose a big result over. So it's going to be critical to get that right.
Yeah, I think that the less said about it, the better. I think the word stays out of it. It's just, yeah, we just want to see the race, and that's it. But who knows what we'll see this weekend. If I had to put you on the spot, I know it's only a Monday. We haven't seen any track action for practice. But who do you think will be the main contender, or maybe the winner of the sprint race on Saturday? I'll start with you, Pete. You can give me your pick.
I mean, at this stage, it's hard. I'll take the easy option and go for Bagnaia, I think, because I think picking the rest of the podium is a lot more tricky. But I'd say, yeah, Bagnaia starts as favourite for the win, probably for me, for both races, to be honest.
And Rob, what about you for the sprint?
For the sprint, I'm gonna throw in a bit of a, maybe not bold pick, but I'm gonna go with Di Giannantonio for the sprint race.
Yeah, I think his confidence is so good, and. Yeah, for
the Grand Prix, the way he adapted straight away to that, the 23 bike, was very, very promising. And then looking at all the simulation, the sprint simulations in Sepang and Qatar, I think Di Giannantonio is, like you said earlier, Pete, sort of going under the radar, but we still know he's on, you know, one of the best bikes. Obviously, it's the year-old bike, but it's still the best bike on the grid. And his form, even since the end of last season, he seems to have carried it in without a blip. So I think definitely for one of the races, he's going to be on the podium, if not contending for the win.
Do you know what? Just to be different, I'm going to just say Marc Marquez for the sprint. I just think, because like you said, Pete, they're looking for three in a row for the Grand Prix. Obviously, they won there in 22 with Bastianini, and last year with the Di Giannantonio. I seem to think this year Marquez will just excel in the sprints, and that'll be his thing. So yeah, I don't know if it counts as three in a row, but you know what I mean. And then for the Grand Prix, I'll go first. I really do think that Paco Bagnaia is going to win the Grand Prix. I think last year, obviously, it was a bit of tension with the world title. He was leading the Grand Prix perfectly until Di Giannantonio came along and then had that big mistake at turn one. He near hit the rear of Digi on the brakes. But I think it's going to be different this year. I think Bagnaia is going to be pretty much the man to beat in the Grand Prix. And like, he was so good in them last year. That was what, when you see the numbers with Martin and him, Bagnaia was levels above him in Grand Prix compared to the sprints. So I'll put down Marquez for the Sprint and Bagnaia for the Grand Prix. Pete, who's your Grand Prix pick?
Yeah, it's Pecco again at this stage, I'm afraid. He's the obvious choice at the moment, isn't he? But the others are close, as you say. For a start, the other guys on the GP24s, Bastianini and Martin as well. Martin, of course, had the tyre problem, didn't he, in the Grand Prix last year.
But
fast at the sprint. So
he was quick, he won it.
Yeah. there's a lot of guys that could be up there. Qualifying is a big thing, isn't it? Less so, obviously, in the longer race, but that will be a big part of it because everyone's just so close.
Rob, who's your pick for the Grand Prix?
It's quite boring, but it's going to be a hat trick. I think it's going to be Pecco who wins it. The only thing I'll say is, I think if Pecco doesn't win, I think the win will still go to the factory team. I think Bastianini is going to be the biggest challenger in the Grand Prix.
Yeah, like I say, he's very strong around Qatar, and I think last year during the race, he was maybe inside the top 10, but he did do the fastest lap of the race quite late on. So
he did that a couple of times last year, didn't he? Where he had the fastest lap with like 4 laps to go or 5 laps to go. So his speed over full race distance was really, really impressive at times.
So yeah, I think that pretty much covers MotoGP for this week. I think we're just going to leave it there, guys, because we've talked for 50-odd minutes now, and I think our listeners will have plenty to go into this weekend so they can listen wherever they are. And on that note, wherever you listen to your podcast, make sure to follow or subscribe to the Crash MotoGP podcast. This podcast will also be available on our YouTube channel, so head over to Crash MotoGP and make sure to subscribe there as well. Of course, for all the news insights, head to crash.net for everything MotoGP. Follow us on social media, and yeah, we'll see you next week.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.